It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, the CPG Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm Brian Gildenberg, founder and CEO of Confluencer Commerce, the managing director of North America for Retail Cities, the host of both the Gildenberg Omnicom on LinkedIn's and the CPG Guys Fast Forward podcast, as well as today's episode of the CPG Guys. Today, I'm recording live from an undisclosed location in the Western United States, Newport Beach, California, and joined by my guest, who I'll introduce in just a second or two. But before we do that, just want to remind everybody to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. If you use Apple or Spotify, please give us a rating, particularly if it's 5 stars. Helps feed the algorithm, makes our podcast more findable for more people who would want to listen to it. Please subscribe to all of our podcasts as well, not just this one, but our sister podcasts as well. We also want to express how honored we are to be rated the number one CPG podcast for 2 years running now, according to FeedSpot, the leading podcast ranking authority. Well, if they're not the leading one, they're the leading one now because they made us number one. So that's a flywheel, by the way, for those of you looking for a productive cycle. We are also very pleased to have joining us in the top 30, our sister podcast, the CPG Scoop, CPG Guys Fast Forward, hosted by some guy who talks a lot, and the FMCG Guys over in Europe, which is really, I mean, all the podcasts are excellent. But if you want to keep abreast of what's happening in the European theater of operations, I strongly recommend that. We're also happy to be formal sponsors of Next Up, whose mission is to advance all women in business and promote the cause of gender equality in the workplace. To learn more about Next Up, simply click on the hyperlink in the digital liner notes of this episode, where you'll also find links to our podcast site, the sites of our sister casts. You'll also find links to follow Shri, CPG guy number one, or number two, his daughters Rhea and Laura on their career journeys, particularly for those of you that know that Laura has recently won a contest to be part of Cat's Eye, Next Global Sensation, an international all-girl K-pop band. So you can follow along with that. All good times. So today we're going to get to our very special guest for today's conversation. Those of you that follow the Gilda Mergabne comment will recognize the voice and face of this gentleman, if you're seeing this, as my partner in crime on events recaps in, I think, now three different continents and multiple places. And we're going to talk a little bit about his day job today for once, instead of what we saw wandering around convention centers by, in the cold and lonely dark of whatever morning it is. Today, we are joined as part of a series that we're doing in partnership with Stratacache called What's in Store, the future of in-store retail media. And today, joined by a gentleman whose business and who himself knows an enormous amount about stores and how people shop in them. And it's Ben Reynolds from Walkbase. Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, it's good to connect once again, thankfully this time in North America. And unfortunately, we're not together, but we will be after the holidays, I hope. But yeah, it's great to see you as well.
Yeah. In the digital liner notes of this episode, we're going to include links to your LinkedIn profile, Walkbase, and Stratacache's LinkedIn pages for anybody to access while we continue with the conversation. But why don't you just start off, Ben, talk a little bit about, you head up Walkbase, which is a division of Stratacache. Why don't you just talk a little bit about what that is for people that are unfamiliar with what either of those businesses might be?
Sure. So, and I'll give you a little bit of background about myself as well. But
excellent.
Stratacache is a marketing technology company. We run marketing solutions, technology solutions for the world's largest retailers and QSRs. So if you go through a drive-through at a Burger King, McDonald's, or Taco Bell, it's our software driving that experience, that digital experience. In retailers, we have 3 million plus digital signs and digital screens worldwide, where we're powering that from a CMS, content management solution. So providing technical solutions to customize the experience, make it more targeted, relevant experience in the retail environment, much of which we're going to talk about today. I run the Walkbase, which is the analytics and AI division of Stratacache, really kind of trying to understand in-store behavior at a very granular level, much like you would an e-commerce site, understanding, you know, where people come from, where do they stop and where they go next, is having that same dynamic level of engagement in your brick and mortar environment. How I got here, Brian, is I think you're path and eyes have crossed many times over the years, but I actually started with Sara Lee, so traditional consumer packaged goods in finance, of all things, an accounting degree, which I don't talk about very much, but I do have that.
And I started my career as an accountant.
There you go. See, I knew we had a lot in common, Brian. So
yeah, we can talk the general ledger treatment of depreciation for 35 minutes, and the crowd will be on the edge of their seats. So
yes. My problem is if you just can't reverse the desk, because then the debits and credits for me get mixed up. But
Right. Yeah, of course not. Don't do that. That's lesson number one of accounting. Don't do that.
Right. Went back to grad school. I ended up working for Sara Lee again, selling fun fat food. So, you know, Sara Lee cheesecake, Sara Lee pound cakes, apple pie. Probably one of the funnest jobs I've had in terms of actually pure sales. And then in about 20 years ago, I delved into this kind of retail media space with one of the first companies looking at full motion video at the point of sale. And so PRN, which was kind of a innovator way back then of providing retail media networks in store for the world's largest retailer, Walmart, Sam's, Costco, Target, even Circuit City, Sears, all these ones, some that aren't even around. So I was there for about 10 or 11 years and then went pure digital. So worked with Hook Logic, which just got bought by Criteo. So the first non-Amazon product ads that you would see on like a Target or a Walmart. Then MaxPoint, which had a really cool identity graph, much like a precursor to what all the customer data platforms that you see today, and how we kind of find people online and offline and create, you know, that identity and follow that customer journey. And then to Walkbase, where the big black hole for me and what I saw as the opportunity is we knew a lot from digital signals around and offline information around people are behaving outside the store. But once they got to the store, until they transacted, there was a little bit of a black hole. And I felt like there was an opportunity to fill in that gap and really connect kind of the online to offline behavior in store. So that's why I'm here. And it's been a great journey and looking forward to talking to you more about it.
Well, yeah, and I think people always forget that the origin story of retail media is not when Amazon decided to proclaim themselves a retail media business, but 20, 25 years ago, when Walmart started trying to sell television advertising in their stores on TVs that were built for purpose. I mean, they didn't even start necessarily putting the ads on the TVs in the TV section. They were building TVs and putting them in the store. So the origin story on this is fascinating, and obviously PRN is now part of Stratacache as well. Let's talk a little bit about, so with Walkbase, so you're talking about the promise of being able to measure the store. And you and I have had this conversation a bunch over the years, where basically the goal of your system is really to turn the store from a measurement point of view into something you can measure as clearly as a digital platform, right? So, you know, you enter the store, that's a site visit. You go down an aisle, that's a click. You pick up a product, that's a cart. You put the product back, it's an abandoned cart. There's all sorts of things that you can do from an in-store measurement point of view that then get really interesting. Can you just talk a little bit first about how you actually do this? And there's a couple of different companies that are out there today that are doing this. So what makes Walkbase?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I agree with you. I'm going to steal your term, which is clickstream behavior for the store, right? So really kind of understanding at a very granular level how people are behaving, just as you would in an e-commerce site. So it's not just people walking in the door, but you know, what zone are they in? Do they have an opportunity to view the screen? How long do they dwell? What's the engagement? Where they came from? Where they go next? It's in that very granular level of information and measuring that media experience. We found a couple things. There's a lot of what I would say noise in the marketplace about how to capture this data. You know, ironically, we started like with Wi-Fi signals on my mobile device and just being able to kind of passively listen to that. Well, Google and Apple decided to shut down that pipeline distribution. And, you know, whereas 3 or 4 years ago, you could probably see 70 or 80% of those signals. It's less than 10% now of just listening to that device. And that's fine. So we pivoted and we started with some Bluetooth technology. So anonymously, just kind of looking at carts and baskets and then triangling that signal so that at a very granular level, our platform catches kind of those XY coordinates of where that cart is. And it doesn't know that it's Ben or Brian at this point. It just sees that path through the store. And to your point of where did they stop? That's a click. Where did they go next? That may be a cart, that kind of thing. And so we do that and it sounds simple, but translating that amount of data into actionable insights and actual impressions and making sure that that session ID is tied all the way through requires a lot of behind the scenes algorithms and computing power. So we've built a platform to be able to easily translate that information into kind of actionable insights and translatable retail media metrics. And then, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about how you would tie that into a known ID, if you will, but it's very privacy friendly start to that process.
Right. Well, and the virtue of this is that there's no infrastructure for the retailer to build necessarily, or not a huge build out for the retailer from an infrastructure point of view to do this, right?
There is a little bit. I mean, you have to put some hardware in, you know, just to be able to capture that signal. But I would say you can either tag a car, but you can also, the same hardware is also would see a mobile device with a retailer's app in it. So it has a lot of tentacles, if you will, that can go well beyond kind of the initial infrastructure. So there is a little bit of infrastructure involved to start, but the use cases go way beyond even retail media for it.
Well, I think too, when people tend to think of this stuff, they'll often think that I need, oh God, I got to put cameras everywhere and all that stuff. And that gets really expensive when you're trying to do this way. And, you know, in my past life at Kantar, we bought Sorensen Associates in whatever year that was, and Sorensen was putting RFID chips in shopping carts years ago. The thing we were never able to do in the pre-AI, pre-high-end analytics era was figure out anything about that person if they ever left the shopping cart, right? Like, then we were just blind. So there was modeling that went into that, but nowhere near the precision you get out of the combination of Bluetooth tracking and AI and algorithms that allow you to actually get a feel for where the shopper actually
is. And I would say that because we hear a lot about computer vision, right? And so, you know, and computer vision can be very good for capturing like demographic information and just basic stuff. I'm a male, I'm age 50 plus, whatever. But it has a couple challenges. One is just the amount of it. To do like, say, a 75,000, 100,000 square foot store, the amount of cameras you need to get the line of sight to get down to a very granular level, say an NCAP level, is enormous, right? So the CapEx goes way up. And then with privacy, there are concerns. I mean, you know, we have, you know, GDPR in Europe. We have California, now New York, and all these other states that are really being concerned about biometrics and tagging and creating kind of profiles and things like that. So, you know, we feel our system is kind of solved for all those things and making it easier for a retailer to navigate that process.
Well, and I think it's actually good for the media ecosystem to be forced to evaluate a problem where demography isn't the way in which you value it. I mean, like, look, if, you know, if a camera picked the two of us up walking through a store, we're 250-something white dudes, right? Like, you know, just shuffling around trying to get our job done. And I mean, we're probably similar in some ways and different in many others. And I don't know that. I often think that in retail media, the signals you get from data like yours around where someone is in the store, how they're progressing through it, that's way more useful to a marketer trying to take advantage of that ecosystem than knowing you demographically, right? I mean, like, I don't need to know whether you have a high propensity to buy a dog if you're in Walmart. I can note if you go down the dog food aisle, right? Like, I can know that with 100% certainty. You either don't have a dog or you have a very hungry dog if you're not buying dog food. So there's just a bunch of things that come out of this type of data that get really powerful. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you're actually able to measure then. So from a media point of view, I think one of the really interesting questions of the 2020s, and this is, there's a number of businesses trying to solve this problem in a bunch of different ways, but part of the struggle with retail media is the in-store piece is the inability to reliably test some of the metrics that media buyers are really used to measuring, things like impressions, right? Like you can do estimates of impressions based on store traffic, but you know, in order to get to a CPM cost for retail media, you would need to know what the M is, right? At some basis. So talk a little bit about how your solution starts to get after that. What are some of the things you can actually measure and detect?
Yeah, I mean, and again, this is going to, let's just take that, you know, the folks in retail media today are used to buying digital, right? You know, I get a click, I get a conversion, I get a buy, I get some type of exposure, and it's really measurable. You know, it's not like a Nielsen in my house old broadcast solution. You know, where we're evolving in retail media and what our solution can do is really just do just that. Imagine if I had a screen in the deli department, and instead of just saying, well, I'm assuming 30% of the people that come in the door visit the deli department and now that's my audience. Well, we can actually show how many impressions that a particular ad got at a particular time of day within that viewing zone of that thing. And then we can also show that, did we change behavior in any way? In other words, you might do an A-B test and say, based on the ad content, you know, they typically went from, say, deli to produce, and now they're going to deli to the meat department or something like that, or deli to frozen. So you can really test the efficacy of your content and your media in a way that you just couldn't do before. And much like you do a digital, you A-B test digital all the time in terms of, you know, am I creating the right behavior? It's having that same dynamic level of information, and it's accurate. It's not a guess. We're not sending panelists into the store and asking, Brian, did you see the commercial? You know, we know from the fact that, you know, these people are in the viewing zone and they dwelled, you know, for 30 seconds or 45 seconds, and then they went to the pet food section or whatever it might be. So it's, we feel confident about that.
Well, yeah, and I think the other interesting thing there, this actually, the deli one triggered something. It reminded me of a conversation I had with a leading person in the retail media world who is responsible for the food side of merchandising for one of the very large retail media networks. And we were talking about this, and he's like, well, you know, we really try to get contextually appropriate. You know, it's like, you know, if you're in the deli section, you're unlikely to see an ad pop up for a candy bar. I'm like, why? It's like, I don't know. Like, that seems like a pretty, somebody's in the deli section, they're hungry, right? Or something like that. I mean, it's like, I get that, but if a person's in the deli section, you could argue that the last thing they need to do is to be drawn to the deli section of the store, right? That seemed like a very media-centric way to solve the problem. like the media buyer is going to, of course, it's the same dumb mechanics and media that get me retargeted ads for stuff I've already bought because I visited the website. So,
and what I would say to that too is also the behavior changes by time of day, day of week. So, you know, someone coming in at a weekday at a 5 o'clock, their shopping pattern may be short and maybe on the perimeter and out, you know, whereas somebody in the weekend is spending 45 minutes to do their weekly shopping treat. You know, we can know that and we can curate the content on those screens based on how they're behaving in the store. And we can also reliably predict likely where their two departments are going to go at next. So that's your point of there's a lot of cross-shopping opportunities and marketing opportunities that you can use, you know, with this data.
Absolutely. And I think part of this too is that in addition to the clickstream data, the ability to do day parting and things like that, which are things that retailers have always known would be useful if they could merchandise to, which is quite difficult though. I mean, it's hard to day part a store. The only store in the world that successfully day parts itself is 7-Eleven Japan, where they can day part two or three times a day because their stores are tiny and it's Japan and it's weird. But for the most part, retailers really struggle with the mechanics of executing a merchandising strategy that day parts. But this, from a media point of view, now allows you to meaningfully day part in some really interesting ways if you've got the data that supports that. So I think this is all really, really cool. Just as a reminder to our audience, we're joined today by Ben Reynolds from Walkbase. And let's just continue the conversation a little bit. So you're talking a lot about the ability to see the customer journey physically, but you're also able to see it more longitudinally too through loyalty card data, right? Like you guys can, your platform allows behavior in store to be linked to, you know, a transactional history for an individual shopper, right?
That's correct. So the other reason we kind of like our platform and the technology behind it is the accuracy behind it, right? So getting down to this very accurate level. And so if you think of a customer's journey path, we call it a session, right? That's a customer session in the store. And I know that's more of a technical term, but we can match that session to a transaction when they're at the checkout counter. So Brian, if you go into a Kroger and, you know, you spend 25 minutes and you visit six different departments and we're going to tell you, you know, you spent 30 seconds in meat and 45 seconds in frozen, et cetera. And then when you transact at the checkout, we see that tag or your signal, if you will, and we can match that or the retailer. We don't have to do that from a privacy standpoint. The retailer decided to match that to the transaction. Now you have an interesting thing because especially folks with strong loyalty programs, like we said, a Kroger that I think 96% of their volume is linked to a loyal customer. You could start to really understand for your loyal customers, what was their shopping journey in store? And over time, you start to build up a really nice profile of like, just like you would online, you know, they know what I clicked on, what I bought from the last year, probably, and also probably some location data outside the store. It's adding that in-store behavior to the customer data platform that's and creates a lot of opportunities for digital activation on-site, off-site, the next time they visit, that kind of thing. So technically, it's relatively easy, but the power of adding the in-store data to grocery, where 80% of your volume still is really an enormous opportunity.
Yeah, well, and as a for instance, right, you can see pretty reliably then, you know, what percentage of customers went down an aisle but didn't buy the product, right? So that would give you a really good sense as to what the opportunity areas are. What are some of the other things that retailers are using your data for to help manage the store better? And then we'll come back on the media side in a minute. But
yeah,
this, you can also use this data, not just from a media point of view, but from a merchandising perspective as well, right?
Right. And honestly, that's where we started. Before the retail media really took off and the last 5 years. I mean, we've been working initially with kind of merchandising and operations. And, you know, merchandising is think about the value of your real estate in the store. So understanding what my most trafficked end cap is, you know, how long are they dwelling? How does that change when I put a different product on there? How does, you know, different stores behave, et cetera? So we've got, you know, folks working with our data to look at their end caps on a weekly basis and say, you know, I was able to get this percent of traffic and conversion. So think of this use case. I've got a highly trafficked end cap, but I've got low conversion. What's going on there? Because it could be packaging, price, promotion, something like that, but the traffic is there. So That is a very valuable piece of real estate in my store. And if you think about the relationships between the retailer and the vendor community and, you know, how they work together, I almost think that it's another first party data set that the retailer could use to strengthen that relationship with their vendor community, if you will.
Absolutely. And I think it gives you a really good sense of, you can learn really counterintuitive things, right? And this now goes back to stuff that learned years ago from using older technology. But one of the great arbitrages in in-store merchandising over the years was that drugstore retailers would always charge more for their end caps in the front of the store than the back. But if you think about it, for the right merchandise, given the dwell time in the back of the store with people waiting for prescriptions, if I was selling something to a prescription-centric audience, it was way more valuable to put my end cap in the back of the store because that's where the dwell time was. So you could arbitrage the retailer's own understanding of their economics and really get value out of that. So if the retailers come to the table with a better understanding of, in the same way that Amazon can sell you a comprehensive understanding of what happens on their site and then gets you super granular data and you run it through Amazon Marketing Cloud and everybody's all hot and bothered about what you can do from an Amazon perspective. But I think that this capability is going to take the vastly larger business for most brands, which is in store, and what I would call, quote, Amazon enable some of the granularity of merchandising and media measurement that goes along with that, which is cool, but also lets the retailer adjust their own activities in some pretty interesting ways. So,
yeah. So just to comment on your last comment, I mean, it's you're making decisions based on data now, as opposed to I think this might happen or hypothetical. But you're right. On the second odd thing is the operation side of it, right? So think of somebody who's in store planning and is laying out a store. If I could look at my data and say, you know, if I put a cut through this aisle, what is that going to look like? And, you know, what is my pre and post on that? Did I change behavior like I thought I was going to? We had one customer who was, they were looking at eliminating a cut through and they looked at our data and it was actually one of the most trafficked areas in the store. So they were looking at eliminating an area of the store that was creating a lot of convenience and hopefully an improved customer experience. And based on data for a change, they decided not to do that, which was probably a good decision. The final thing on the operations, we've had folks work with us to really align their labor with how people shop the store. So sometimes in grocery and mass, like the front end of the store is one of the most high cost from a labor standpoint, just because they want that experience to be as seamless as possible. So they end up staffing a lot of folks to make sure that I've got enough check lanes open, or, you know, I can get people through that the checkout, et cetera. And we've actually worked with folks to be able to say, based on the number of people coming through the store, here's how many check lanes you might need, or you're going to need more people in 15 or 20 minutes, or you're going to need less. And so it's just being able to adjust the labor based on how people are shopping the store and not just eyeballing it from a manager standpoint.
Well, yeah. And I think, too, that it's going to be fascinating to see what retailers do with this data, because my suspicion is because I think there's two things. One, I think retailers are always a little conservative about changing the store, particularly about taking merchandise out of the store, right? Like that's always the hard part if I'm a retailer. If I'm going to create more open space or more opportunities to create different types of engagement, if I'm pulling aisle space out, one, the buyer loses aisle space, so they get all upset, and the senior merchant's now struggling to make their... But if I can, like, with data prove that a store that's got less stuff but more mobility and more display space and more sort of opportunistic selling opportunities is a more productive overall store than my 64 feet of grocery, which is the death march down the aisle of trying to get to whatever it is, and half the aisles in a store are just cut through aisles that people use to get to the back of the store because there's nobody in them. Like, you know, how do we really think about how we use that space better? I mean, I think of a retailer, I love my friends at Target, but I always pick on their grocery set a little bit. But like, I'm pretty sure that if Target installed your technology for 2 days, they would learn and tried something different in grocery, they would realize that creating more of an engaging path through grocery is going to sell way more groceries than trying to sell 2/3 of what a Walmart Supercenter sells in a very, very sort of long closed off environment. So I think there's going to be really interesting opportunities where when people talk about creating better retail experiences, oftentimes that goes to really expensive stuff that's, you know, really hard to do. But often you just create a different experience by reconfiguring space, and this data would allow a retailer to do that with more confidence, right?
Yeah. And for this type of use case, you know, while I would love it to be in every store, you don't need it in every store. You know, you would do a sample size and then you could extrapolate some of those results. And the format's going to be similar. So you learn a lot. And like you said, put it in a couple stores and the amount of usefulness and data value you'd get out of it is really enormous.
All right. Got two more questions. One of which is like, now flipping back to the media side, because you've, particularly within large retailers, you've got a, or even small ones where the, you know, it's a, maybe it's Criteo or Citrus Ads, it's responsible for the media side of that business. And then the merchandising and ops team are historically where your product and your solutions live. Can you talk a little bit about how retailers are trying to bridge the gap there from your perspective? Like, are the media teams aware of what they can do from in-store yet? Do they understand that in places where your system is there and they have a retail media network, how does that connection work so far? And what about it could be improved?
I think we're still in the early stages of that. I would say it's really interesting. I mean, you of all people, I think Brian would appreciate some of the conversations we're having. When you talk to a merchandising or operations person, they typically don't have a digital media background. So when you start talking to them about connecting it to a loyalty program and then being able to digitally activate that you saw Ben Reynolds in the cleaning aisle and you want to be able to send them an ad because I visited that aisle and didn't convert, they not shut down, but it's like getting from A to B is hard to do. But then you talk to a retail media person who says, you know, well, you mean you can connect an in-store shopping trip to my customer data platform that then I can tie to a LiveRamp ID and then be able to activate that and, you know, pull in a bunch of other information and create an audience and reach 30% of the people that visited the cleaning aisle and didn't convert in the last 30 days. They get it right away. But what they don't get is, well, how do I operationalize that? You know, so it's like, because they're used to just being able to put a code on a website and have it flip up. And this takes a little bit more effort. You got to put something in the store, a piece of hardware. It has to translate the software platform, translating the XY coordinates into actionable data. It's all built, but connecting those two, we still got a ways to go. And kind of that's what, you know, it's one of the reasons you and I have been, or I personally have been running into you all around the world this last year, is really trying to build awareness for that capability. Because I think the light bulbs go off when you can finally make that connection, but we're still in the infancy of trying to build awareness for that capability.
Well, yeah, and I think part of what Stratacache is sponsoring on January 13th, the Saturday before NRF, for those of you that are going to be in New York for NRF, Stratacache is running a day-long session, you know, basically called What's in Store, the future of in-store retail media as well, and talking about a whole bunch of different aspects of how to bring the in-store component of retail media to life in a bunch of different ways. And I'll be there, you'll be there, you know, everybody who's anyone will be there from a retail media point of view as we seek to really try to bridge the gap between this sort of last frontier of retail media, if you will, and everything else.
Well, right. So, you know, look, it's no secret. I mean, it's, you know, there's only so much inventory on our own site. So, you know, if I'm a retailer and I've got my own site, I've got a finite amount of inventory that I can monetize. And so offsite has been big. Can I leverage my data to build audiences with my vendor community offsite? Yeah, that's a huge opportunity on social and on connected TV, you know, being able to link that ad that I saw on Netflix or Disney Plus back to a transaction is huge. We think in-store is huge in that way. And, you know, both from a screen perspective of being able to smartly build a network that reaches the people in a targeted, relevant way. Content is really important. It's not just putting a piece of hardware in there. It's curating. It's in-store is a different experience. So you have to think about that experience in the store. And then the walk-based piece of that is connecting that journey back to the customer data platform to be able to follow that shopper along wherever they may be, Brian, you know, wherever they may be. And so it's enabling that retailer to really enhance that connection, and it's filling in that in-store data piece that they don't have today.
Right. And who do you mind is using your platform? What are some of the best applications you've seen of your platform so far?
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, it started with the merchandising and operations standpoint of just being able to, you know, we've got some large customers here in the U.S. and globally, you know, a couple grocers and one mass retailer. So we've been working really well closely with them on that kind of marketing operations side. On the retail media network side, like I said, we're in its infancy. We're getting started, but I think that the opportunity is enormous.
Excellent. And my last question to you. So what do you think is next here from either from a technology point of view or from a planning point of view? What should we be looking out for over the next couple of years as retailers and brands try to harness the power of the store from a retail media point of view?
Yeah, I'd say be smart and efficient with how you go to market with that type of thing. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. And I always like this idea of a kind of a crawl, walk, run approach. So in a crawl phase, and you can do this quickly, Brian, in terms of you might put walk base in, put some screens in and really understand, okay, how are people interacting with the screen? And you might do that in 10 or 20 stores just to really understand before you say, I'm going to spend X millions of dollars on because I need the inventory in the next 6 months to be able to do this. I would strongly encourage anybody to say, you know, let's get smart about this. Let's do a pilot, if you will, 10 or 20 stores. Let's learn for 90 days and then go, you know, and then make that decision. But make that decision based on data, not what somebody's promising or some hypothetical out there. That would be the one thing. And then technology-wise, I mean, look, the app adoption in retail is still low, right? And so in outside the store, I think of content following me as a consumer. It follows me on my device. So we've got to figure out a way to have better interaction with big screens in the store, but also the one-to-one interaction with me as a customer in the store. And I still think we have a ways to go in that environment. So if I look at, and you know this industry better than I do, but I look at somebody like Starbucks who's made it, they've incented me to transact with them on my mobile device. You know, the majority of things, how do we evolve in that retail environment to bring that along? And we're never, don't get me wrong, the in-store experience is always going to be there. And that's why we're still seeing the majority of sales there. But I think that's a big opportunity for us to integrate that in there and do a better job that way, if you will.
And also to see when it works and when it doesn't and how to do it best. I agree. I think the app is, for most retailers, the app is a sort of an uncharted frontier from a media and measurement point of view. So that's great. Just a quick reminder to our audience, if you want to find any of our content, go to the cpgguys.com URL where you can find anything we've ever done, literally. And if you think you or your company's got some thought leadership to contribute to this community discussion, please drop us a note at contact@cpgguys.com. Maybe you can join us on the podcast like Ben does. Please don't forget to drop us a rating at cpgguys.com. And thank you, as always, to our near 27,000 followers as we approach the holiday season. We are very grateful to each and every one of you. Ben, thank you for a tremendous conversation. I think we've covered this idea today that the store isn't just some giant untargeted, unspecified. I think today, without the measurement that you've got, the store reminds me a little bit of where linear TV advertising is at the moment, where it's mass, it's broadcast. I know it works. I don't really know how. I don't have the granularity that as a media buyer specifically today I like. And then for a retailer, it's like I'm running a television network with no Nielsen ratings, right? Like I know people watch the network. I just don't really understand exactly where to put my advertising plan. So I think all of this data creates a really great opportunity for the retailers to optimize how they communicate. This notion of really treating the store as a potential, you know, as really being able to do that sort of clickstream analysis for the store and measure the transactions and pathway through the store granularly tied back to a loyalty card creates enormous potential. I mean, imagine being a conventional media buyer, putting an ad on connected TV, knowing someone went to Kroger and knowing they went down your aisle and knowing whether or not they bought the brand that you had shown them the ad for. I mean, that level of specificity can get super powerful. And obviously the other use case is that because this use case is so strongly rooted in the analog retailers, merchandising and operations teams, as anybody knows from a retail media point of view, if you're trying to amplify anything at retail, those are the teams you need to amplify it with. So bringing us, partnering with a solution that already helps those teams achieve their own independent objectives, I think can be super powerful. So this was great, Ben. Thank you very much for your time and look forward to seeing you at NRF next month and have a happy holiday season.
You as well, Brian. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye.
Content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.